Blog Talk Radio.
Your home for Purdue football news. Welcome to the Golden Black Radio pregame show as we get you set for Saturday's kickoff. Now here's your host, Kyle Chardon.
The Boilermakers hit the road for the first time this season, heading to winless Nebraska as a favorite, looking to inch closer to 500 on Saturday. I'm Kyle Charters, Matt Stevens, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik from GoldenBlack.com here for the Golden Black Radio pregame show. All right, let's get right to it, Matt. The Boilermakers 1-3 on the season. I think probably one of the most confident 1-3 teams in the country. But all four of those games were at home. Playing on the road at Nebraska will present the Boilermakers some other issues this week.
Yeah, I think you restart the fear you had defensively because, you know, that you started the season with, because it was the first game. Well, now it's the first game in an environment that's not new to them. It's a first game where things are going to have to be done on the fly, and you've got so many new and, you know, I would say young parts on defense that they're coming off of a game where I think the style just was set up for them to have a beautiful game, and they did. This is not the same style. Nebraska likes to run the football, but they certainly like to spread you out. And Scott Frost has a history with Marcus Mariota and Mackenzie Milton at UCF that they will spread you out, and they do know how to throw the football. So, and they have a special player at quarterback in Adrian Martinez, who is by all accounts healthier than he has been since he hurt his knee in their opener against Colorado. So, I think this defense has a big objective tomorrow, to hold Nebraska's running game, maybe that doesn't include Martinez, so that, you know, you're basically making a freshman beat you. And that's going to be, I think, Nick Holt's call to this defense, is that they have to get pressure. They have to be able to contain Adrian Martinez as much as they can. And they're going to have to do it away from Ross-Ade Stadium. And so I think all of the fears you had about this defense in the opener kind of come back in this road opener, because it's kind of the same environment and the same kind of elements involved.
This is a Nebraska team that should be angry, one would think, starting the season 0-3 and then getting blasted and embarrassed in some ways at Michigan last week. Do you think that adds an element that the Boilers will have to overcome on Saturday?
I think there's an element of desperation. I think that Scott Frost has never been through this before, Kyle. I mean, you talk about his entire coaching career. He started at Oregon, and they won 24 games in his first 2 years as an offensive coordinator. You talk about, you know, inheriting an 0-12 team at UCF, but he didn't go 0-12, and he got him to 6 wins in a bowl game his first year, and then they went 13-0 his next year. He's never been through this before. He's never been through 0-3. He's never been through a fan base questioning if this is going to – be a complete rebuilding project. How long is this going to take? He's never been through this before. And quite honestly, Nebraska fans have really been, you know, the Nebraska program has kind of taken a dip since, I would say, Frank Solich got fired after a 9-win season, all the way back to then. But yet, I don't think this program's ever been in this position either, in terms of a fan base, in terms of a booster club membership, all of those things that go into this program. You bring, you know, the golden boy back home in Scott Frost. Now you start at 0-3, and if this thing starts at 0-4, then you start to look at Nebraska's schedule and go, you know, where's the win coming? And I don't think Nebraska fans have really ever had to ask that before. So I do think that Jeff Brom, Nick Holt, the, you know, veteran players like David Blau and Kirk Barron are expecting a desperate, hungry, you know, I would just say Nebraska team that knows that they need a win. And in the same way, but see, here's the thing, is that a lot of these Purdue players know exactly what that felt like, because last Saturday afternoon, they desperately needed a win before they went on the road, and they got it against Boston College. So they know where Nebraska's living right now. They lived it themselves, and then they know exactly where they're coming from. And so they should know exactly what kind of effort level they should get from the home team on Saturday afternoon.
Back-to-back solid outings for Purdue's offense under the direction of David Blau. So what is the next step now forward if Purdue's offense is to take one?
I think it's to get the running game going with Markell Jones and or DJ Knox. I think that they've tried. And I think Purdue just flat went away against Missouri because, again, Jeff Brom drove to the park and said, hey, I got to throw it 60 times. This is the only way we're going to win. I do think they made a concerted effort to run the football against Boston College and to not abandon the ground game, especially in the second half when they had a lead. I think that the guys up front, Kirk Barron, Matt McCann, Dennis Edwards, they've had a lot of success actually running behind Grant Hermans at left tackle, believe it or not. Those guys up front really need to have a solid day because I really think it's going to be a four-quarter game. It's going to be a physical matchup, and I think that they have to prove that their physicality can overcome any kind of home field advantage, especially with the crowd noise that's going to happen among 90,000 people at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln. So I think that physicality-wise and Purdue's ability to run the football conventionally, David Blough can account for that a little bit with quarterback draws and scrambles and all those things, but I do think they need to run it traditionally with Martell Jones and DJ Knox, and if they're able to do that, I think that's the next step that this Purdue team can take to become more balanced, that Jeff Brom wants to be. Everybody knows that Jeff Brom wants to throw the football, but he would like to be a 50-50 balanced team if possible.
Okay, so Purdue wants to get the ball more to Rondale Moore. He's already gotten the ball a lot, it seems, but maybe there's more for him. What kind of form does that take? Could he get the ball out at the backfield, perhaps, run between the tackles? What do you foresee being the next element maybe that Purdue puts in offensively for the freshman receiver?
So there's a lot of teams that are running spread offenses, and they take their slot receiver, and you'll see, and they'll motion him into a running back, and then they just hand him the ball out of the RPO. I do think that that's on the table for Purdue, and I do think that you might see that for Rondale Moore. Not to say that he's going to become a running back, because he's not, but I do think that if Nebraska decides, which I think a lot of teams are going to do, which is to take a linebacker and take a safety and just bracket him and say, you're not throwing him the football. And especially you're not throwing him those 5 to 8 yard curl routes. That's just, you're not going to allow that to happen. Okay. I really feel like, you know, Jeff Brom kind of hinted at this, you know, this past Monday morning, they had a meeting. Hey, how can we get the ball to Rondell? Because defenses are going to adjust. It's not like Purdue wants to stop themselves from doing what they're doing with Rondale Moore. That would be stupid. But what they want to do is they want to account, you know, beforehand for defenses basically having film on Rondale Moore and saying, we're not going to let you do that anymore. So I fully expect the possibility that Purdue could motion him into the backfield out of the slot receiver position and then just hand him the football out of an RPO type action. And what it does is it forces Nebraska to put another person in the box because they have to follow Rondale Moore. And then I think the outside throws to a Jared Sparks and Isaac Zico and even maybe a Terry Wright can happen easier because you can figure out what's one-on-one coverage at this point. So there are a lot of can happen with Rondale Moore, I think, in this offense, and I think that they're accounting for that going forward. And Jeff Brom has always struck me as a guy that doesn't want to react to a defense. He wants a defense to react to him. This is just another way to do that. And I do think it sounds like an easy thing, but maybe you just hand the ball to Rondale Moore out of the backfield a couple of times and let people see that. And then maybe you can go back to the mid-range passing game with him and get him out in space and allow the 70-yard touchdown that happened last week to actually happen again. But I do think defenses are going to start doubling Rondale Moore, and Purdue's going to have to account for that.
Your conversation with Sean Callahan, the publisher of HuskerOnline.com. That's coming up here in just a moment. Hey, thanks, Matt.
No problem.
All right, let's turn our attention to the weather for Saturday's game and bring in WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown to give us an update. What's it going to look like on Saturday, Annie?
Hey, Kyle. You know, it's not going to be, unfortunately, the most favorable conditions for a Purdue first road game. We're going to see temperatures right around a max of 56 degrees. Expect rain showers. Best chances will be after 7, but those rain showers will be with them throughout the entire game. Slight chance for lightning, so I don't see any delays or hiccups with that. But get ready. Those winds out of the south, southeast are going to be about 10 miles per hour. So, yes, unfortunately, not the best conditions for the first road game. Definitely not favorable for a strong passing game. There should be more turnovers than we'd like to see. So not abandoning the game will be very important.
Annie, thanks for the weather and the breakdown as well. You've had a couple of good weeks of forecast, so I guess we'll let this one slide this week.
I have, except for that one we did have, but I think, you know, they've already played in conditions like this, so I think they should be ready.
Yeah. Thanks, Annie.
You're welcome.
That's WLFI meteorologist Annie Brown bringing us a game day forecast. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back to listen in with Sean Callahan. We'll do that here in just a moment on Golden Black Radio.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. Sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there too with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
The Charters team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to buy, sell, upsize, downsize, or anything else, give me a call or text 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish, and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill, near the corner of 10th and Main Streets in downtown Lafayette. Welcome to our table.
It's time to break it down as we go in-depth about Purdue's opponent.
And welcome to another edition of the Opponent Preview on the GoldenBlack.com radio pregame podcast. Today, since Purdue is taking on the road for the first time in the 2018 season, I've got Sean Callahan here on the publisher of HuskersOnline.com, the Rivals affiliate for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Sean also works on KETV Channel 7 in Omaha, the ABC affiliate, and on Big Red Radio 1110 KFAB, also in Omaha. Sean, I really appreciate you taking the time out for the GoldenBlack.com radio pregame podcast.
Well, no, hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start with the obvious. Give me the temperature of this fan base right now in Lincoln, Nebraska, after this 0-3 start and then an 0-3 start for Scott Frost at his alma mater.
Well, I mean, naturally people are disappointed because I think it's a lot like Purdue. Nobody expected Purdue to be 1-3 going into this game, and nobody expected Nebraska to be 0-3. I think both fan bases probably thought, hey, these two teams might be both 3-1, you know, going into this game, and the season just kind of has taken a turn, but I think it's been a reality check that, you know what, this job is not going to happen overnight here. Scott Frost inherited one of the worst teams in the modern-day history of Nebraska football, and it's going to take more than just improved coaching to do it overnight. I mean, it's going to take, you know, years and years of building, and most people understood that. And Scott Frost has the backing of the state. He's one of theirs, as they would say. He's from this state, and he played here, so he's got the backing of the former players. He played for Tom Osborne. He's got the backing of Tom Osborne. So he's about as untouchable as it gets. Now, if he was an outsider coming in and this was the start, it wouldn't be very good. But I think the fact that he's kind of a made man in this state, so to speak, people are going to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially because he just proved what he could do at Central Florida.
What is the X's and O's problem right now to their 0-3 start, if I can say it that way? Is that, do you feel like offensively they're not transitioning to the way that Scott Frost wants to play offense? And I'm a little bit familiar with that after covering the Chick-fil-A Bowl of his UCF team,
Or do you think that they just don't have the athletes on defense to kind of do anything that they want to do on that side of the ball? Or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of several things. Number one, not having the opener against Akron killed everything. I mean, just not being able to have that first game with the electricity at home, to have it canceled right after the opening kickoff, losing that game and not being able to play it, set back a lot of things. I think they would have came out and played a great game that opening night, and they would have been on their way. And then the next week, game one, they play Colorado. They went for 600 yards of offense, but they had a couple of just turnover-type deals that you probably would have gotten out of the way if you had a game underneath you. And I think they probably beat Colorado if they had a game the week before to kind of work some things out. Well, in that Colorado game, Adrian Martinez goes down in the fourth quarter. And before that, Tristan Jebby had left the program days before the opener. So their backup quarterback became a walk-on, and he had to come in and, take over and try to lead them to victory at the end against Colorado. Nearly did it. But they were pretty much undermanned. Well, Martinez then doesn't play that next week against Troy. They start the walk-on, and that limited everything they did on offense. They just couldn't run the same playbook they ran the week before against Colorado. Well, then Martinez comes back, and they're playing Michigan, who has maybe the best defense in the conference, one of the top five probably defenses in the country, and they just weren't ready for that. So it's a lot of things, but I think that loss to Troy really, really complicates how you look at Nebraska, because that really wasn't the Scott Frost offense that day. And then the next week it complicated it to me even more, because Michigan was that good up front with Chase Winovich and Rashawn Gary, and Nebraska just didn't have the linemen. Their offensive line and their perimeter blocking to me has been maybe the biggest problem. They haven't been able to really set the edge very well on those quick screen passes and just the things that they want to do on the edge. And if you watch Chip Kelly and if you watch Scott Frost at UCF, their edge blocking and perimeter blocking was outstanding, and it led to so much. And you kind of take that for granted if you're just a fan. You just think that happens automatically. Well, it doesn't. And I think Nebraska's players are having a hard time at times just executing some of that stuff on the perimeter blocking-wise, and definitely on the offensive line. They don't have the tackles right now. They're okay on the interior, but the O-line is a huge, huge inconsistent thing week to week.
I'm unfairly going to have you play doctor here for the next few minutes, but give me the sense of where Adrian Martinez is right now as he's trying to get back from a knee injury against Colorado, and where you think he might be Saturday afternoon against Purdue.
Well, I think he's healthy.
Okay.
He had a nice run against Michigan, but they really limited the design run calls where they had him just running on a QB keeper. So they protected him because they kind of have to protect him. He's literally backed up, Matt, by two walk-ons.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they only have one scholarship quarterback on the roster at this point, correct?
That's active. They have another one that transferred from UCF. He was the number two at UCF. So in a perfect world, Noah Bedrill, the number two at UCF last year, was eligible. They would have been just fine. They'd have him. But the fact that Tristan Jebby pulled out days before the opener just threw – I mean, he was a four-star. They had two four-star guys ready to play this year. And you wonder if Frost would have handled that differently now knowing what he knows. I mean, could he have done the Dabo Sweeney route or Nick Saban route and just play Jebby and Martinez both the first game or two and let it play out that way and then make a decision by this point? I don't know, but that's water under the bridge. And they're definitely in a tough spot, and it's scary because if Martinez gets hurt, it puts them in a really, really tough bind.
What has been their issue on defense? Because clearly that seems to be the side of the ball that's really befuddled Nebraska, no matter who the coach is, no matter what the staff is. And it really seems like Scott and his staff are trying to do this with older guys in another new system for these guys. What's been the bugaboo, at least throughout three games, on defense?
Well, week one, they were really good on
defense.
They held Colorado to well under 100 rushing yards. I think they had six or seven sacks. They had seven sacks week one. The whole entire year before, they only had 12 on the season. So that Colorado game, painted a picture of kind of what they wanted to be. Then week two against Troy, they were just inconsistent. And a lot of it is just fundamental things. Guys missing tackles, guys running the wrong lanes, you know, not playing their assignment, and it leads to big plays, communication. Their secondary has been vulnerable a little bit at times. But, yeah, it's not just one thing. I mean, it's several things that have kind of caused them to break down. You know, Troy hit a 40-yard pass on them early. That kind of set the tone for them that game to build that 17-0 lead on them in that Troy game. And so it's, you know, against Michigan on their first drive, I think the second play of the game went for a near 50-yard run on the ground, right up the middle, just a handoff, you know, a simple ISO-type run that went for nearly 50 up the middle. So they just had breakdowns that you just weren't expecting to see with this defense. And getting in a hole, too, kind of puts pressure on them. Nebraska has only really had a lead once this year, and it was against Colorado. It was 28-20. You know, that was the only time they've really played, you know, up on somebody. So other than that, it's always like their back's against the wall. There's kind of a lot of pressure to hold, and they haven't played well, you know, in that situation, kind of being the team down.
I'll get you out on this, is that I know that year one is probably the ultimate rebuilding year here for Scott and what he's trying to do here in Lincoln at his alma mater. But what's the end game here? After an 0-3 start, I know he said after the Michigan game that he thinks that this is rock bottom, but you've got two straight road trips after this game to Wisconsin and Northwestern. What do Nebraska fans want to see before the end of this 2018 season, in your opinion?
Just to feel that it's heading back in the right direction. I mean, I think the pipe dream is, could they somehow slide to six wins and get there?
Right.
They have five home games. That are all going to be like this Purdue game. Bethune-Cookman's an FCS game, but Illinois, Minnesota, Purdue all come in to Lincoln and Michigan State as well, and then Bethune-Cookman. So you got five there at home still. Northwestern on the road all of a sudden looks much more winnable with the situation of Jeremy Larkin at Northwestern and, you know, just the inconsistency they've had at quarterback at times. You know, that's a game that Nebraska has a shot, I think. And we know Ohio State and Wisconsin, they're going to be major underdogs, and probably at Iowa as well. I mean, Iowa probably will be a double-digit favorite, at least I'd say 10 to 14 points, if not more, in that game. So those are the three real tough ones. But I think they've got six opportunities still on their schedule, and what can they do with those? I think that will ultimately decide kind of how this season has a feel to it. And to me, it's really about the feel, Matt. I think, if anything, this season – you know, needs to have a feel like, you know what, this is definitely humming in the right direction. And Scott Frost has kind of steered this thing back on the tracks after a really, really rough start.
Well, Sean, we appreciate you taking the time. I'm looking forward to my first trip to Lincoln, and I'll see you on Saturday when Purdue opens up its road schedule.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa, not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brahms Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
The Golden Black Radio pregame show, the most in-depth guide to Saturday's game you'll find, featuring the staff of Golden Black.
Ed Kyle Charters here with Brian Newbert, as Brian provides some perspective on Saturday's contest as Purdue travels over to take on Nebraska, 3:30 kickoff on Saturday. All right, Brian, Purdue got off to a poor start this year, obviously, 0-3. Do you consider this Nebraska game in some ways a little bit of a makeup game, I guess? Because, you know, typically I think going to Nebraska, you would figure Purdue would be an underdog in that contest, but they're a favorite here. And maybe this is one that you, even though you knew the Cornhuskers were rebuilding, didn't automatically chalk up as a victory before the season started.
Yeah, I think on paper, this looks like a very winnable game, but I think paper and reality might be at odds with one another here, because a couple things I think people need to take into account. One, Nebraska is going to get better, and they're going to get better at home than they probably are elsewhere. I think the Michigan game was an aberration, most likely. But also, I don't know how much we've even seen Nebraska in the form Nebraska will be in on Saturday, in terms of them having their quarterback, in terms of them playing at home, in terms of actual game conditions that are relevant to how they're going to fare tomorrow against Purdue. So I think that there's a lot of unknowns with tomorrow's game, but certainly the 0-3 record and some of the struggles they've clearly had to acclimate to a new coaching staff, a new system with a young quarterback and no depth at quarterback, no options at quarterback, I think have obviously changed the way you probably look at this game. I don't know if you ever go into a season expecting to win at Nebraska, but This looks about as favorable as it's probably ever going to get going to Nebraska.
David Blau has been fantastic the last couple of weeks for Purdue. Elijah Sindelar is now, we're told, fully healthy, although maybe he could have came in and played a little bit if needed last week. But even with Sindelar back out there, this is the David Blau show at this point, unless something changes, right?
And something always seems to change. At quarterback at Purdue, yeah, you always expect something crazy to happen. It's been this strange Game of Thrones for years now, where just when you think one guy has taken it, something happens, and then it ends up back being thrown into chaos and us asking the question every week, who Purdue is going to start at quarterback, and then not finding out until they come out for pregame warmups. Obviously, I'm not anticipating anything unexpected happening, because if you expected it, it wouldn't be unexpected. But I'm just saying that every time normalcy seems to have struck at quarterback, something happens. Now, I think that the enduring reality here in all of this is, I don't know how much it matters. I think they're both good players. I think Purdue can win both with either of them. But the way David Blau is playing right now, if he can continue on like this and nothing changes, it certainly looks favorable for Purdue the rest of the way, because he's playing as well as probably any Purdue quarterback has in quite some time. And I say that knowing that at the end of last year, if Elijah Sindelar was playing at a very similar level. But Blau is really, 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 really playing well right now. And it would be great for Purdue and really change the outlook for the season if he can keep rolling like this.
Purdue's defense took a big step forward from the Missouri game to the Boston College game. I think maybe that was a little bit better matchup for Purdue. Perhaps Nebraska provides some different kind of challenges. But as you look at Purdue's defense, how impressive, or what characterization would you give it? Is it what Nick Holt was able to do from one week to the next, sort of to get the right guys in the right positions to give Purdue's defense the best opportunity against Boston College?
Yeah, and part of what I was talking about before in terms of the unknowns with Nebraska, I think, you know, Purdue is built to just take away the run. That's their MO defensively. That's what they showed last year. They want to do, and they can do very well. And I think that was all they had to worry about against Boston College. I don't want to say it was easy, but it was easier. It was a polar opposite matchup from the one the week before against Missouri. And a much simpler one. I'm not saying any less of a daunting one, but I'm saying a simpler one. And they handled simple very well, just like they took away the run last year, really, really well. That was kind of their identity. That was what they did really well. That's why they were successful largely last season. Now, I think when you have an opponent here who's going to try to go quick, who's going to try to spread Purdue out. They may not be doing it as well as they want to be doing it quite yet. They have a lot of inexperience at quarterback. They have to keep him healthy, obviously. I do think this is a very different matchup, and this is much more in line with some of the matchups Purdue has struggled with this season than it is the one matchup that it dominated. And I think that is a huge part of the unknown that goes into this game tomorrow. Tomorrow is a huge test for Purdue defensively, even if it doesn't look on paper like this is an offense that's really, you know, to use a bad cliche, firing on all cylinders, so to speak.
Let's hit on a quick recruiting note. Purdue will only have one home game in October. Does that make that date against Ohio State a pretty big one from a recruiting point of view?
Well, it's a huge one because not just because it's the only one that month, but because of who's coming. They would be coming if they had a home game every week that month because it's a big game. Obviously, you want to show off your environment when you bring recruits to campus, and there aren't going to be very many better ones. And when Ohio State comes, they're going to have Jalen Graham, the safety from Detroit, in for that game. They're going to have King DeRue in for his official visit after the running back from Texas was supposed to come for the Boston College game, but weather had other ideas, put off his flight. So those are two guys right there that not only are really prominent targets, really important guys for them, but also might be warmed up to make decisions here pretty soon. Jalen Graham's been to Purdue 100 times now. I think it's a one school race for him. Basically, he's been giving people opportunities to catch up to Purdue by taking some other visits and stuff. But I think Purdue's in a great spot right there, and they would love to close him out. I think King DeRue, I think if he would have made his official visit for the Boston College weekend, I do think he would have committed. Barring any sort of horrible experience on the visit, which colleges are typically pretty good at avoiding horrible experiences on official visits. They kind of plan for them and they kind of do a pretty good job not ensuing disasters. Yeah. So I do think if he had visited for Boston College, he would have committed. He sounded like he was ready to. In what he told me prior to the visit. Now, something could change before the Ohio State weekend. Maybe some other schools might get involved. Maybe people might start hammering away at Purdue. I don't know. But assuming nothing changes between now and that weekend, I would still think Purdue would have a good chance to get him as well. So Purdue's going to have two very important targets in for that game and could get some news thereafter. It certainly hopes.
Thanks, Brian.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Brian Uber with his perspective and a little bit of recruiting as well as Purdue gets set for its game Saturday at Nebraska. All right, we'll turn our attention to the Big Ten, take a historical view of the matchup as well. We'll do that in just a moment on Cold and Black Radio.
Your neighborhood bar, 6th Street Dive Bar and Grill, is a perfect must-stop location on your way to and from the game at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette. Whether it be great food, authentic Tex-Mex, along with many Indiana favorites, served from 11 a.m. to 3 a.m. every day. Sports, games, live music, trivia, or just fellow Boilermaker camaraderie, the Dive is the place to go. Don't miss Geeks Who Drink Trivia at 7:30 Tuesday nights and live local music without a cover charge at 10 o'clock Fridays and Saturdays. If it's college sports you crave, the 6th Street Dive has you covered there, too, with its multiple big screens. So dive on in to the 6th Street Dive at the corner of 6th and Salem in Lafayette.
The Chargers team at RE/MAX Ability Plus is your experienced real estate group in Greater Lafayette. If you're looking to buy, sell, upsize, downsize, or anything else, give me a call or text at 765-412-5217 or email at kyle@chartersteam.com.
Life doesn't come with a financial roadmap. It does come with a lot of bumps and red lights. Steering clear of those doesn't have to be difficult. With First Source Bank's online money management tools, you can see all your financial accounts, balances, and transactions in one place. So you can easily set monthly budgets to help manage expenses and debt. Get the green light to a successful financial future with First Source's money management tools. First Source Bank, where better is better. Member FDIC.
What else is going on around the league? Let's take a look. It's the Big Ten Roundup.
And Alan Karpik here to talk a little bit of Big Ten. It is a light week, to say the least, in conference play this week in the fifth week of the NCAA season. Only five games, so we'll take a look at three of those contests. So aside from Purdue and Nebraska, which we're obviously talking about in the show, we'll leave out that Central Michigan and Michigan State game. Indiana at Rutgers, the first of the three we want to look at, Al. Rutgers, not very good. 1-3, losing to Buffalo at home last week. Didn't just lose to the MAC opponent, got throttled in Piscataway, 42-13. The Hoosiers favored by nearly 17 points in this one. Is Chris Ash at this point playing for his job?
One would think. I mean, in this very impatient world, you know, they just aren't turning in the right way and getting smoked. I mean, that's what's, you know, they didn't play the Buffalo Bills. They played the Buffalo Bulls. I mean, that is a that's a problem. And I just think that, you know, for Indiana to be that big of a favorite on the road, Indiana missed an opportunity. Or at least I thought they competed well in the second half against Michigan State. I'm not sure they're ready – quite ready for prime time, but this is a game they obviously have to win, and they should win easily. And the Indiana team I've been watching this year, I think, will win easily in Piscataway.
When's the last time that Indiana was a 17-point road favorite in the Big Ten? That
nutty.
That's pretty crazy, I'd say. That one's a noon kick at 4:30. Number 14, Michigan, will play at Northwestern. The Wildcats just 1-2. Michigan favored by 14.5 points in this one. This, you know, this is an ugly trend here for the Wildcats and Pat Fitzgerald because they just have gotten off to slow starts now 3 years in a row.
Yeah, and that included an opening day win at Purdue. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm not sure what's going on there. Now, I know Purdue wasn't ready for prime time, apparently, in game one, and they didn't do enough to win that game. I get all that. But, you know, you figure Clayton Thorson was getting more healthy. They could run the football, or they did against Purdue. Now, I know a lot of teams did early, but my point is that very strange. And that's why I'm not a bettor, but Northwestern, that line intrigues me because I know Michigan won big last week, but I haven't been all that impressed with the Wolverines. I can't figure out Northwestern. And you're right. If Jill holds serve or his team does like it has in past years, this might be a very, very interesting game, you know, on Saturday up in Evanston because they tend to play well when their back's against the wall.
7:30 start. This is the primetime game in the Big Ten and one of the biggest in the country as well. Number 4, Ohio State, traveling to number 9, Penn State. Ohio State favored in this one by a field goal. Now, if you look at the Buckeyes, the remaining schedule, they do go to Michigan State, and they finish up against Michigan at home. So perhaps if you're looking for the game that the Buckeyes need to get through to have an undefeated regular season, knowing that those two in-state rivals are out there as well, this one might be it at Penn State.
Yeah, I think this is their game to really put themselves in a very, very good position for the college football playoffs, right? And obviously their own division, because you don't want to lose to Penn State, then you have to bunny hop over them. They have to lose the Nittany Lions. They have to lose twice. I know Ohio State's a poster person for being able to not make it to the Big Ten championship game and still win a national title, but those days may be further and farther between, hard to deal with. But really going to be an interesting game because it's the whiteout at Penn State. Ohio State's got the players. They're a better football team. I know Nick Bose is out, but I just think they're a better team. But maybe Penn State has the intangible, and Trace McSorley's really, really something. So it's going to be a great game on Saturday night.
That's a Big Ten roundup for Week 5.
Let's go back in time. With a historical look, here's Alan Karpik.
All right, Al, let's take a historical look at this contest, Purdue playing at Nebraska. Now, the Boilermakers have had some wins, not a lot of them, in venues that seat 90,000 or more, but they've won some games, and they'll get another opportunity to do so on Saturday at Lincoln.
Well, it's a as you know me long enough, it's a manufactured kangaroo statistic because Nebraska only seats for 85,000, but they probably will have over 90 by the time it all gets said and done Saturday afternoon. Though I'm amazed at how their fans keep showing up. But yes, Purdue has won two games in front of bigger crowds in its history, road games, I should say. And of course, that being the 2004 win at Penn State, when the Boilermakers went to 5-0, they were in front of 108,000 at Penn State. And of course, Danny Hope's first season, the Boilermakers win at the Big House for the first time in 43 years, with a win over Michigan, that classic 38-36 thriller. So, you know, it's just tough. It just shows that it's been tough for a lot of programs to win at Nebraska, win at Penn State, win at Michigan, win at Ohio State. It's not just Purdue. But so I don't mean to put anything more on this team, but it will show this is a big-time environment and a big challenge for Purdue.
Okay, so Purdue is 1-3, Alan, as we know. They're also a favorite on the road at 1-3, a three-point favorite at Nebraska. I cannot imagine that 1-3 Purdue teams have been favorites very often, particularly not on the road.
Well, and you're the one that came up with this note, so if people think it's crazy, it is a good note, though, actually. And I did do some research, and since 95, Purdue has been 1-3 three times, and strangely, the last they were a favorite in 2009 and in 1996, I believe it was, but they were both home games. The Northwestern game in 2009, when Joey Elliott threw that ill-fated interception right before halftime, and Purdue had a lead, and wound up losing Northwestern. But they haven't done it on the road. They haven't done it in Nebraska, and I don't think Nebraska hasn't been 0-3 since 1945. I think it is. So we're in uncharted territory, and to be a favorite with a 1-3 record is really astounding in its own right.
That's Alan Karpik with a historical look at Purdue and Nebraska. Hey, thanks, Al.
Thanks, Kyle.
All right, let's take a break. We'll bring Matt Stevens back in. We'll do that here in just a moment. This is Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Braum Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, Industrial and Classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event at the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill, near the corner of 10th and Main Streets in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Broadcasting from Golden Black World Headquarters, north of Purdue's campus, this is the Golden Black Radio Pregame Show.
And we'll bring Matt back in to put a wrap on this one, talk about some key matchups and predictions. And also, Matt, I'm not sure you really want to do this at this point, but we'll also play over-under. I don't know how you're feeling there. It's been a rough go at the start of your career here on the podcast for over-under.
I feel like the Washington Generals. Basically, we do this, I lose, and then we move on. Like it's kind of like an act at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. The whole thing's a setup.
Right.
All right. So last week, correct me if I'm wrong here. Last week it was Rondell Moore all-purpose yards, and we set that at 200. And
yeah,
I took the under.
Got it back to like 175, so I was off.
Yeah,
got there.
I had it at 161. Yeah.
Okay.
Somewhere
so, yeah,
right around there.
It was looking good for me in the first half when he took the ball 70 yards on a 5-yard slant. And I thought, wow, okay. And then Boston College actually played some defense on number 4 for the rest of the game. So, yeah.
Yeah. Probably should play some defense on him pretty regularly for both halves. It seems like opponents are going to need to do that. All right, I know what category I want. Trying to figure out where to set the line is a little bit of a challenge, but I'll come up with something here. I want to go with a sacks for Purdue, sacks generated by Purdue's defense, because the last couple of weeks Purdue has gotten more pressure. You know, I thought it was good last week, certainly. I think there were some voodoo numbers in there against Missouri a little bit. But the Boilermakers have been better at getting to the quarterback here the last couple of weeks, certainly in numbers. And Nebraska gave up, I believe, 4 sacks to Adrian Martinez last week to the Wolverines. So I will ask you this. I'm going to set the line at 3.5 sacks for Purdue. Are you going to take the over or the under?
Part of me wants to take the over because I think Derek Barnes is their best pass rusher, and I think that Nick Holt figured that out and going to use that on certain passing situations. I'm going to go under, and here's why, is that, one, I don't think Nebraska is going to want to put Adrian Martinez in that much danger, seeing as he's the only scholarship quarterback they have. And two, I do think he's a tough guy to sack because – you know, I don't know what the home scoring's like in Lincoln, but sometimes they just register those as, you know, scrambles that go from negative 2 yards to just register it as a rush and not a sack. So I'll go under, but I mean, I do think they're going to get 2 or 3, but I don't like going over that. So
yeah.
I also think that Purdue is also going to do a lot of what's called bubble rushes, which is maybe not, you know, they're not going to try to get a sack because if you miss on your sack attempt, now there's a huge lane for Adrian Martinez to take off and get a 20-30 yard run. So I do think they're going to be a little bit conservative in how they rush the quarterback, even though they know they're going to have to.
All right. And I'll take the over. We'll see if you can get your first victory of the season on Saturday.
Probably not.
All right. Probably not. Okay. Key matchups now for the game. And for me, maybe more than a matchup, I think Purdue's special teams. You know, I don't know where Purdue is with special teams because I feel like some of what happened last week was simply Spencer Evans being ill or whatever was wrong with him during the game. Now, I am sort of the opinion that if you go out and say you're going to play, then you need to play to your maximum efficiency. Certainly, it did not look like Spencer was able to do so. But how much of Purdue's special teams issues were related just to the one guy? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that Purdue's special teams need to be better going forward or something somewhere. And maybe you can, you know, the extra point missed against Eastern Michigan a few weeks ago was a prime example. But somewhere, sometime, something's going to happen in the special teams if Purdue doesn't get a couple things corrected, and it's going to bite them for a loss. So for me, that is not necessarily a matchup, but an area that needs to be looked at for the game on Saturday. What's a matchup for you you're looking at?
And I agree with you. Just to add one point to that is that what's going to happen is there's going to be a huge kick return, and suddenly Purdue on the road is going to be in a really tough spot. And I think that's what they've got to figure out. And they've got to figure out if J.D. Dillinger is better at kicking the ball in the end zone. Again, but Spencer Evans had been good at that when he's not, you know, trying to dry heave on the sideline. So they've got to just figure that out. My big matchup is Nebraska's wide receivers versus Purdue's cornerbacks, which I should scare the heck out of every Purdue fan after what they saw against Missouri and Eastern Michigan. But I do think they got some confidence back, you know, forcing the 4 interceptions against Boston College. But Stanley Morgan Jr. and J.D. Spellman are all Big Ten wide receivers, and they are the targets for Adrian Martinez. Of their 51 receptions, 26 of them are both to Stanley Morgan, total, or to Stanley Morgan and J.D. Spellman. I really think it's a combination of Antonio Blackman again, Tim Kaysen, and Mackie and Mosley, and then you've
Kenneth
got your
Major.
Safeties that have to. And then you have you get your safeties and Mosley and Thieneman that have to be in communication with what they do from a zone coverage standpoint. But I do think that you're going to have to have one-on-one coverage at some point, and that's going to be problematic for Purdue in trying to at least cover Stanley Morgan Jr. as an all Big Ten guy. And then again, Stillman's got 2 touchdowns and he's averaging 9 yards a catch. But they really got to limit the damage. I don't think that they can really shut down, like I said, Adrian Martinez. But if they can limit the damage and what he does in the pass game and what he does in the run game, then I think Purdue's got a real shot to win the football game. And so, we'll see where the confidence level is with these cornerbacks going into a game like this in a road environment. Going up against all Big Ten guys.
All right, so as for my prediction, I have trouble with this game because I really don't know what to expect out of Nebraska. I just don't have a read on where they are mentally as much as where they are physically after coming off a loss at Michigan and sort of just looking a little lost and confused like they were, and then some of Scott Frost's comments during the week and things. So this one is a tough one for me to figure out. I do feel like Purdue's playing confidently. I think that will transfer as long as they get off to a good start, which we know Nebraska has gotten off to poor starts this year. I think outscored in the first quarter 37-7. So I feel like the Boilermakers should have the upper hand early. And the game in some ways reminds me of the game at Missouri last year where Purdue gets off to a good start, then it can really sort of put the hammer down, if you will, maybe early on in the game, mess around with the psyche of the Cornhuskers and sort of knock them out early. So I've got the Boilermakers in this one. I think by a close-ish score, but I'll take Purdue by a final of 30-24. What do you have?
I've got the same thing. I mean, first of all, if it ends up like the game in Missouri, I don't know how many Nebraska fans we'll see in Memorial Stadium by the end of the fourth quarter. And that'll be a jarring sight for this program under Scott Frost. I have concerns about where Nebraska is defensively more than I do offensively. They have weapons on offense. If they can block people, they have the quarterback of the future who's really good now in Adrian Martinez. They have wide receivers that can make plays. They have the number one JUCO running back in the country from this past recruiting class. They should have ways to score. I have questions on defense as to how they stop anybody, and because they just haven't. In a sense, they stopped Colorado for about 3 quarters and then just fell apart at the end of the game. A lot of that had to do with the momentum getting sucked out of the balloon when Adrian Martinez went down with the knee injury, but that shouldn't affect your defense. And so I think David Blau has a big – I like the idea of having senior center, fifth-year senior quarterback, and having the best athlete on the field in Rondell Moore. So all of those things line up. I'm taking Purdue by 3. I like Purdue 31-28 in a game that I think Nebraska makes a late charge, and I think Purdue escapes with a 3-point win and takes the 2-3 record to the bye week and starts looking toward – that B word again, bowl, if they can get to 3-3. And so I think that Purdue's playing really, really well on offense right now. And I think if they can establish any kind of running game, I think Nebraska's in trouble. And I'll take Purdue by 3.
Should be a good game on Saturday, no doubt about that. Hey, thanks, Matt.
No problem. Thanks, Kyle.
All right, that'll do it for our show for this week. Thanks to our sponsors as well, Follett's, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the East End Grill, 6th Street Dive, Charters Team, Remax Ability Plus, and First Source Bank. All right, that'll do it for us. More pregame on the website at goldandblack.com. Thanks to Matt Stevens, Brian Newbert, and Alan Karpik. I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.